Awesome. Hello, everyone, and welcome to LH1 Live. My name is Jessica, and it is April's LH1 Live call, so this is no April Fool's joke. We are all meant to be here. So really excited for today's session because we're going to change it up. I have a really cool idea that I thought I'd try out. So here's kind of how today's session will go. For anyone new, let's kind of go through a couple of things quick. One, this is 100% your call. So if you have questions, or anything else like that, hang tight on those because we do have like obviously a topic at hand. After we do kind of the main event or main topic, we will go into news. And the reason actually for going into news and kind of what's kind of happening is that someone brought it up on a call, when we were kind of prepping for these calls, maybe it was sometime in January when I was looking for ideas, and mentioned it'd be really helpful to kind of hear about other news events or even LH1 gatherings, things that were happening in our community, and just keeping people informed so everyone was aware of it. So the next thing up will be news, and we'll talk about there. And then that'll be about the top of the hour, and I'll actually turn the recording off. So then if anyone does have a question they want to ask without being recorded, that's the perfect time. If you maybe want to say if you're new to the call or if you just have a question that's not best for recording, that's a great time to. And then we just kind of stay on and hang out for a bit and just kind of chat and catch up. We have so many regulars on this call, so thank you guys all for being here, and some new people. So it's a great opportunity to be able to kind of get information, tips, tricks, and advice. So that's kind of the plan for the day. And I plan to leave and plan to and have been consistently leaving everybody unmuted. So if you do have any questions or comments and want to jump in, please do. It's a collaborative call. And this one's even more collaborative. So kind of what we'll do for today's call, the topic is, it's kind of, I'm going to call it popcorn of questions. So me and ChatGPT have been working very hard in the last 30 seconds and came up with a couple questions that I thought would be really fun to like conversation starters, but also really beneficial because I think all of us could learn something from each other, whether it's tips or tricks or stories, because I think some of the best things and best opportunities, especially on this call, is the things that we learn from each other. I think one of the best things too is part of LH1 Live and how it's such a successful call, gosh, maybe 13 years in, is that everyone learns something from somebody else, or we're all here to support each other. And so I think, and that's honestly the purpose. So I came up with a couple of questions, and I kind of will have it from like all different aspects. So at one point we did talk about like life and things like that, and were like tips and tricks around the house or just like setting up maybe your home environment, your work environment, and things like that. So I have a couple questions that we'll get started with. But I'll pause there and see if anyone has anything that they, like any questions before we dive in. If not, I'm ready to go. Okay, cool. This is a fun one. So we're gonna start in hot on all of these. So my first question is, what is one thing about your vision journey or LH1 journey, I should say, that surprised you? So I'll kick us off and we'll go from there. But I would say the one thing that surprised me was the amount of friends, how fast I made friends when I kind of found my thing. And as many of you, if you've all probably been part of this call for years and years, my thing is running. And it's just been really cool to be able to be so surprised on how kind and generous people are, but how much they're just willing to really kind of just give up their time and join you for a run, whether it's 2 miles or 20 miles. And I feel like I've just been so pleasantly surprised and so thankful, for the amount of friendships that I have and, being able to kind of take them with me on my journey, but they really kind of just put me in a different mood and totally changed my mindset. And I think I'm surprised because I was never really a runner before. So it's amazing how much running did change my life. So, I don't know. What about you guys? What's something that surprised you?
Lorenzo from Connecticut, just how everyone had become adaptive, and I was behind the curve. But once I got past that and started learning how to adapt. It's just incredible. And just where everyone was an inspiration. But you're right. There's just the people out there in certain group, my musician friends and stuff, that were like, yeah, let's do it. There's no reason why we can't stop playing or anything. So it's awesome.
Love that. Thanks, Rosa.
Hey, Jessica, it's Paul Laurie.
Hey, Paul.
I know you're going to hear a lot from me later, but
I
would say something really recent that surprised me is how incredibly kind and caring TSA employees are with me, and probably with others, when you're traveling alone and using a white cane. And that was evident recently, even though things were kind of chaotic in airports and they're not being paid and, you know, they've got staffing issues and everything. But I'm telling you, Lisa and I encountered some kind TSA employees in San Diego Airport when I was traveling with her outbound to the East Coast, and then when I was traveling by myself back from the East Coast to San Diego, just incredibly kind and caring and helpful, and so that was a nice recent surprise in my 7-year journey.
Ooh, that's such a good call. That I had was actually traveling last week as well, and yeah, plus one on that. They're so nice. Any other surprises? Anyone a better cook than they thought they'd be?
Hey, Jessica, it's Maria. Can you hear me?
Hey, Maria.
Hi. I am not a good cook, never was a good cook, still not a good cook. and I don't even blame my blindness. But the one thing kind of along the same lines is that people will help if you just ask.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing is actually getting to the ask, right? And people will help. And very early on in my journey, I was teaching group fitness classes pretty much every day of the week. And I knew I was going to have to start driving. And I talked to my members that were coming to my classes. And by the time I left every class I was teaching that week, I had someone volunteer to pick me up and take me home from each class. So I never did miss a class, even though I was losing vision going, you know, through all of that and had to, you know, step away from driving. And I found that to be true even going forward, that now I want to, you know, I join friends at the pool and I join friends at Pilates and they pick me up and take me home from these different locations. And it's because I asked. I don't ask them every time, but I asked, and now it just becomes part of our routine. It becomes part of our friendship. And that's what I learned early on, is helping us just becomes part of a friendship, because we would do the same for them as they are doing for us. And that took me a long time to get past that and to kind of accept that.
Totally agree. I love that. Any other surprises? All right, let's jump to my next one. This one's super useful. What is one life hack that you are super excited about, you learned, or that would be great to share?
Hi, this is Joe. Oh, sorry.
No, please go.
This is Joey from California. Little bit of an unethical life hack, but if you forget somebody's name, you can totally pull the blind card and just go, oh, sorry, I didn't recognize you.
It's true. That's great. I wouldn't call it unethical. I would just call it strategic.
I mean, we're terrible with faces now, so.
Yeah. Who else has a life hack?
Okay, this is another kind of random one. Also, again, Joey from California. If you're a cane user, armpits are really helpful for carrying things because you have a limited amount of hands, but you can kind of clamp things in between your torso and your forearm. And I do that all the time, especially considering I love coffee, so I always have a coffee in one hand and a cane in the other.
Heck yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Backpacks are the best.
Yes. I think the life hack that I learned here maybe 13 years ago was squirt your toothpaste directly into your mouth. Don't try putting it on the toothbrush. And I'm like, oh, it still is the tactic I use every single day.
Yeah, I was about a year into sight loss before the Braille Institute offered that to me. That was my one, I went to a life skills class. So what about the toothpaste? And she mentioned that, and it was just, wow, why didn't I think of that? I don't know if this is unethical, but yeah, bringing a cane places, it's good if, kind of one of the things I've always struggled with is asking for help, and I've kind of surprised myself that I'm doing that more, but I could still stand to do it more. But yeah, bringing a cane places, even if you're like somewhat familiar with it, with the area, that really opens people up to ask you if you need help, if you haven't asked for help yet, because people are really nice overall.
Hi, Lissa.
Hey, Richard. Good to see you. Do you have any life hacks for Jessica? I know you just joined, but Jessica, tell Richard what we're looking for right now.
Yes, we're doing kind of a round robin of lightning questions that I'm asking. And this next one is, what's a life hack that you could share that'd be really beneficial for the group?
A life hack that I can share. Build your network, because when your phone fails or something doesn't work or you forgot your cane, there's always a network you have to either call up for anything, groceries, take your dog to the vet, go shopping. Even if you have a home network already, I have a wife, but a lot of times Melina can't go do things for me right away. So have a good support system, whether it's family, friends, or, you know, others in your community.
That's good.
Hey, this is Tim, Charlotte. You know, the cooking inspired me. I've been using a lot of eyewear while cutting things because of having to put my face so close to, like, especially an onion. But I, you know, obviously wear pepper, but even, like, bell pepper, things like that. Like, lemons. That's what I was cutting, lemons. And I was, like, literally going to go blind twice because I was squirting lemon juice all everywhere. But random eyewear while cutting things.
A knife glove is really good these days, too.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Boom. I had one from back when I used to work in a kitchen at Whole Foods years ago, and I totally forgot about it until I was unpacking a box about a year or two ago, and I could really use this now. Yeah, it's a, you can chop faster with one. It protects your, I'm sure you can find one on Amazon really easy, but yeah, so you're not risking chopping your digits off or anything.
I love that.
Is that the one, Chris, that the night's where I got one of those, too? It looks like a chain link glove, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, mine's like more kind of like white, I guess. But yeah, it's kind of a light. Yeah, but I think we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah. When I use my slice machine, I go to clean it, I put that on because I can't see that sharp blade as easy.
Or even like just using a kitchen thermometer more. Of course, a larger one, but like just it's actually, even if you're not visually impaired, it's a better way to cook, like chicken, steak, or anything. Like you kind of just, and so, but since I, you know, especially once I cut up on a steak, you know how many times I've been in a restaurant and be like, but does this look medium to you? You know, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Which is so ridiculous. That maybe that's a surprising thing. I'm surprising how I cannot tell if a steak is rare or well done. But but yeah, I use that a lot because it's like can't tell from just looking at it, and then it's generally a better tip anyway.
That's such a good call. And even like getting like blue light glasses, like because we're so close to our phones anyways, so like not just like cook our eyes, but also you could just use those glasses also when you're cutting a lemon. I'm like double mm-hmm. use some of that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about using a thermometer for meat to test it, do you have a talking thermometer? Because I do. I don't use it often enough, but I do have one of those. You can get them.
Yeah, I have a talking thermometer. My daughter just comes and looks at. No, I'm just kidding. I do have a talking thermometer as well. And now they have Bluetooth thermometers that are amazing. So you don't even have to. Something's in the oven. You can... You know, it just goes to your phone. So that works well as well.
Interesting.
When you have shampoo and conditioner both look identical, I put a piece of surgical tape or, you know, medical tape around the conditioner. So I know the two would up. Don't worry about using the wrong one.
Ooh, medical tape. That's a good call, too. I would have said hair tie, but you probably don't
hair know. Hair tie. Yep. Yeah, that's the girl thing.
Yeah, girl thing, Carlinda.
You know, I've got a bump dot on my all-purpose cleaner so I can tell the difference between that and Windex.
Ooh, that's a good call.
When it comes to shampoos, I used to rubber band it, but I really like using Redken shampoo, and if you buy the smaller container of the Redken shampoo, it actually has Braille on the back. And I know not everybody here is a Braille reader, but it'll tell you if it's shampoo or conditioner, and so I've just been reusing the smaller bottles and filling it up with, like, bigger bottles.
Smart.
So I have a quick story. Years ago, I was at my brother-in-law's house, and we were going camping, and the night before, I took a shower. And it was his house, and I'm really lathering my hair up with the soap in there, and it's really minty, and it's just different kind of soap and kind of tingly, and I was kind of weird soap. I didn't mention anything, but the next morning I'm like, yeah, what's that minty soap you guys have? The shampoo, I mean. And he goes, that's the dog shampoo. So there's that.
Great.
I'm sorry.
I guess you could say that the life hack is when you're at a guest at somebody's house, be sure you ask which one is shampoo and all
definitely.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
But a lot of people love their dogs, so it's probably pretty high quality shampoo, though.
It was very minty. I was very
fresh. Probably had a very shiny head of hair.
Yeah.
A shiny coat.
Yes. Life hacks. Safety pin your socks together. So they always match.
A tip I have for socks, there are ways to keep them matched together, but I think it's just easier to buy all black socks.
Ooh, also smart. That's a good point.
I've just decided not to worry about whether they match or not. I've got other family members that do the all black thing, so I don't get that option.
Another tip, something that has been really helpful for me, I found a good large print daily planner.
Ooh.
It's from the brand Easy to See, and it's the only one that I use. There's a lot of large print planners out there that are not easy to see. They're actually small print, or there's no space to write anything, but the Easy to See ones, those are great.
Ooh, okay. That's good to know.
How is that brand spelled?
It's spelled E, and then the letter Z, and then the number 2, and then C. And it's on Amazon.
Okay. Thanks.
Painter's blue tape and Sharpie's black color. You can write it big enough, and there's different sizes of the painter's blue tape. You can find out which one works for you, and writing on that, I label a lot of things with that. I did that in my workshop, and I've been doing other things lately.
Oh, the blue painter's tape is genius.
Yeah, the blue and the black contrast, it's wonderful. And, you know, the tape comes off without ruining anything also.
I have a goofy story about early on in this. I bought a bunch of Sharpies, but doing a order online, of course, the Sharpies aren't the right kind, and now we just got to use them because we got them, but They're like the calligraphy style tips instead of a regular Sharpie tip, so it's kind of annoying.
If anybody has any smart TVs, I had one and didn't realize till having one again about a year into my journey. The talkback feature on a TV is very nice.
Oh, yeah.
But like, you know, like if you're going through, like, you know, the YouTube app and obviously can't read. And like, I used to zoom in with, like, seeing AI to see what video is coming up. But the TalkBack feature will just read everything right back to you.
And that's on, I mean, that's on smart TVs. So that's Android. Or like, getting the, I mean, additional cost is the Apple TV. And then you get voiceover. But yeah, that's such a good point. I forgot about that. Cool. Any other ones? The blue tape.
While
I'm like, oh, I never thought of that.
While we're talking about TVs, make sure you check out TVs. I thought the LG and was told the LG was the best. And I got the heavy duty screen on it because that. I tend to bump it, and I took it back and got a Samsung. The Samsung is 10 times more user-friendly for blind people.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I replaced my LG with a Samsung, yeah.
Good to know. I have a Samsung phone. I should know that, but that's as I start replacing TVs. Great idea.
Yeah.
And Lorenzo, the phone, I noticed, I had the tablet, then I got the TV, then I had the phone last year. But I pulled up, I asked the, I had YouTube on the phone, and it just started playing on the TV without prompting. It's like they said at conference a couple years too, it's kind of a good hack is if you already have, make sure everything's tied together. Like if you already have like all Apple or, streamline everything.
That's a good call.
Oh, the Real Mino mode on the Samsung TV is kind of cool too. Real Mino mode. There's a light, medium, and heavy option. What it does, it gives like an outline around things, around like words and people. The tablet one's better because it's a white outline. I haven't figured out on the TV. The TV, it's have a black outline. But like if I watch like a baseball game and, you know, player hits a ball, you can just see like the little like black circle kind of go, or like a hockey game, you can see the puck easier, things like that.
Nice.
Wait, what's that mode called?
It's Real Mino. It's Realmino. They developed it like 3 years ago, and it won a bunch of awards from like some low vision institute, and I think it was standard on all their smart TVs as of last year. But it's great on the tablet too. Yeah, the TV. Yeah, I like it on both of them.
Noted for all of our March Madness fans. I'm like, I will go look for that.
That would be good for hockey. I mean, hockey's impossible, right? I mean,
oh, like, so true.
That's a good one.
God.
I think I heard one more person. Who was that?
UConn.
Oh. I'm a Wildcat fan over here. Careful. okay, next one. Okay. Uh-oh. Let's talk recent stuff. Who has a win that happened to them recently that they love to share? Recent wins are always super fun.
This is Eugene. I actually just finished a season in Park City with the National Ability Center. Ooh. And I trained as a ski racer.
Wow.
And I just got back yesterday.
What does that entail? What does that look like?
Yeah. I've been gone since December to March. And I had a couple, actually not a couple, I had six guides that I started with at the beginning of the season. And ended up with one. We were in Canada last week for our last race of the season. And it was all the disciplines, downhill, super G, slalom, and GS. And it was great learning. Got to meet a bunch of Paralympians and as well as other blind skiers. So it was just really great to jump into it. I had the opportunity, so I took it.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what are your particular races?
Yeah, all four. I'm training for all four. And, you know, the goal is maybe 2030 Paralympics. We'll see. But this was a great first year. I'm older. I'm not a great skier. But now I have like a baseline to go off of, so I'm pretty excited. And now I need to work out during the summer to actually be in condition for when the ski season starts. So, yeah, it's just really exciting.
So what was your journey? Did you ski a lot before? You said you're not a great skier, but did you ski before and after your vision loss?
Yeah, a little bit before. I'm here in California, so I ski in Mammoth. A little bit before I lost my vision, and then afterwards I took a couple year break because obviously I just didn't think it was possible anymore. And then it was just kind of like once a month, there was a disabled group here in LA that took us up there. But this season I probably skied about 60 days. And we ski for like 5 hours a day, and it's the most, right, I've skied probably ever.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And so then generally after you've gotten all figured out, is it one person goes down in front of you and tells you where to turn and stuff like that?
Yeah. We're pretty close together. It depends on kind of the discipline. But we have a communicator. And there's so much more that the guide, I feel like the guide has the most pressure on them because they're looking back at me. You know, we're talking to each, it's not just one way. I have to give the guide commands such as wait or go, which is like go faster or slow down. Yeah, so there's just this kind of language that we need to learn together.
Wow.
And I was just so happy to do it. It was really challenging at first because I had to learn their bus system. You know, I can't rely on anyone to just drive me anywhere. I had my guide dog with me, but I basically, after 2 months, I just had to decide to leave her at home because it was just really difficult managing my dog, feeding, walking, and trying to get somewhere on time. And again, you're out for hours at a time on the slope. So there's definitely a lot of times that I was just thinking, like, why am I here? This is really difficult. A lot of the crashing that happens. I don't know if you know, for those of you who do know, slalom is the really tight gates that you go back and forth. And those really kick you in the butt, because there are polls that you just don't see. And even though you're following your guide, it's not like you're in perfect line right behind them. So your tips of your skis hit the polls just every now and then. It's just a really painful process.
Oh yeah.
And you just, in your brain, you're just thinking, God, if I just had vision, this would not be an issue. And obviously I know I'm there because I have the opportunity, because I became blind, right? I have this opportunity to do it. But when you have these like difficult challenges, you just kind of think to yourself, God, if I just had vision, this would not be a problem. I would not be making a fool of myself. I could show my coaches that I actually can repeat like what they are trying to teach me. But my coaches do understand, they deal with every single type of person. But yeah, it's just a difficult thing to accept during the process. And I definitely broke down a couple times, but overall, I mean, it was just a really great challenge and a good experience. So I think that's my win.
Love that. That's cool.
Thank you, Armin.
I'll say yeah. I think you're inspirational.
Well done.
I mean, that's a really cool story. And it's like, if you had vision, you wouldn't be doing this crazy stuff and you wouldn't be taking these risks. And
oh yeah.
And you wouldn't be enjoying it either. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I really had to sit down with my guide. She, I mean, we really had some heart to heart as far as me just totally breaking down. And I don't think I had cried so much since until right after I had lost my vision and how traumatic that was. It's been 6 years now, which is just crazy. But because I was in this position, yeah, it was really difficult. And I can be proud that I kind of overcame a lot of that.
Bravo, Eugene, bravo.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Chris Herbst in Pennsylvania. I think your story is really very inspirational, and you're very courageous, and I'm glad you shared it.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Eugene, this is Maria. Are you Eugene that's up in kind of the La Quinada, Montrose,
yeah.
Pasadena?
Yeah.
I remember talking to you a couple years ago. Yeah,
oh, yeah,
so
of
good
course.
To hear. So, Maria in San Diego. Yeah, it's so good to hear from you. And I think that is amazing. Way to go. I love that. I love
yeah.
that. Great.
Thanks so much.
Congratulations. I think just deciding mm-hmm. to go and take that challenge on is huge. It's absolutely huge. So bravo, bravo.
I think, I don't know how many of you are still employed, but I have my disability and I just kind of use that to fund my it's been 4 months, I guess. And if you do have the opportunity, the means and the time, if you're able to take on something big in your life, something meaningful, I mean, I would definitely encourage it. I think it builds character, at least.
Definitely.
So, Eugene, did they have enough snow, or were they creating the snow?
It was really rough. Yeah. But the thing about, so they did create snow. But the thing about ski racing is that it's a very smooth surface. So, number one, that's really advantageous. And then number two is that you're pretty much on the course by yourself with your guide. And that's another really big thing that was attractive to me. Right? So smooth surface, and you're not having to battle everyone else on the run. And that's kind of perfect for a blind person.
This is Chris in Pennsylvania. How was your dog when you returned?
Oh, she's great. She's just lived like a normal dog with my daughter and my wife. And there's no difference. I actually haven't worked her since I got home. Again, it's been yesterday, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Yeah.
So I have a skiing story. I was getting ready to compete in the winter sports clinic for disabled veterans in Snowmass, Aspen, and been through Winter Park, Colorado, and also Eldora, a local resort. And it's on my sixth run down, and I had a heart attack. So I think I'm much older than Eugene, and my win is that I'm still here. So that's that was a good win for me, I think. So I'm the mend now. Win. Yeah. So
how recent was that?
It was tough, but I'm getting back into trying to get my strength back, and so I'm looking forward to that. But no, I think.
Richard, was it this season?
March 6th. So yeah.
Richard.
Wow.
Yeah. So not competitively, no slaloms or anything, but I hadn't been skiing in 25 years, and I decided to pick it back up, and I think more conditioning next time that would be. I'm doing good, and yeah, I'm going through cardiac rehab right now, and I look forward to doing more things. So, yeah, that's my win.
Good for you, Richard.
Richard, if you wanted to go, if you just wanted to talk about it, and about the program there in Park City, I would love you to reach out and talk about it.
Yeah,
it's a very good program. The whole season is $5,000, but they have scholarships, and so in the end, I paid $1,000 for all the coaching. They provide all the ski wear. It's all like a team ski wear. They provide transportation, hotels for travel to races. So, I mean, they're really supportive. If you or I've kind of offered this before when it was a local skiing organization in Mammoth, but if you have any kids that are visually impaired or anything like that, I'd love to get them
definitely, yeah,
into a program or something. Yeah, so reach out to me, please.
So much fun, yeah. No, yeah, a lot of fun. I forgot how much I missed it. And,
yeah. And you're never too old.
You know, never too old. But yeah. I think I might have a couple years on you.
Maybe.
But yeah, you're never too old. My instructors or my guides, they were, gosh, in their 60s, and I think one was in their 70s. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is Chris, and I'm in my mature 70s, and I've had heart issues, and I'm so sorry to hear you had a heart attack. And my cardiologist, I'm his first patient who has ever had a mitochondrial disease, and he's such a great doctor that he really looked into everything about mitochondrial disease dealing, and especially dealing with the heart. And on my recent visit with him, just last week, he said, "Guess what, Chris?" He said, "CHOP, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, who has a great one excellent." Mitochondrial Frontier Department, one of the best in the country. He said, they called me up. He said, and now they asked me if I would take on another patient with LHON, And he
That's
says,
awesome.
So he said, now I have a second patient, kind of just like you. And because he's so well versed in this mitochondrial stuff, especially with the heart. So I just thought, wow, that's really remarkable since this is so rare. And he's really a great guy. And I thought that was kind of really interesting that they called upon him to take on this new patient because he knows his stuff about the mitochondria and the heart. And how it can become an issue. So
oh, most definitely. I think that's one of the things I've had LHON for 3-4 years now, and very young when I was diagnosed at 19. And as we get older, we start to have other maturing symptoms of just life, right? And some of those can be connected, right? So it's always a good idea to stay connected. And the very first time I heard about it was a little bit before the conference that I went to a few years ago in North Carolina. It was a call like this, and somebody had mentioned that, and that's why I so miss these calls. So thank you for bringing that up. That's awesome.
Both of you, thank you for sharing. Lorenzo here in Connecticut. I'm in my best years at 63, and everything's generally good. But with when your body's affected with that, did it affect the eyes, the vision, or the optic nerve at all, if you don't mind me asking?
Go ahead.
No, if you're asking me, Chris, yeah, I was affected glaucoma 13 years ago. And one of the things I learned was that even if you're just a carrier and you have the, you're a carrier with the gene, everyone should, even if you're a carrier or you're affected, it's good to have a baseline echocardiogram, so to have that on your record, so that they know how your heart is with a baseline echocardiogram, and electrocardiogram, and then
an echo. Wolf,
yeah, right. Electrocardiogram, and then if your heart's a muscle, like you're up, and. If you ever have a heart issue of any kind, they have that on your record. And that was suggested by a doctor at one of our conferences. And I think I'm correct, Lisa, right?
Yeah, Chris, you're right. It's one of those things where I think everything in the world of LHON, you're going to get some people saying one thing, some people saying another, but I think you'll pretty consistently get everyone agreeing that mitochondrial mutations impact energy needs, and the optic nerve is a high energy part of the body. The heart is a high energy part of the body. And there have been some connections between mitochondrial mutations and heart issues. And it's not definitive, but most doctors will err on the side of caution and, say, hey, we're not sure. And it's not that hard to get an EKG, and let's just get that. And we created a handout on the topic, and I showed it to my cardiologist and said, what do you think? And she's like, hey, I work in the ER, and I don't like having somebody walk in with a heart event, and I know nothing about them. I love having a baseline. So mitochondrial or not mitochondrial, getting a baseline is a great idea. So that's kind of how I would advise or say the world is. You're not going to get consistent information. It's not a straight line between, cause, effect, mutation, problem. But on the other hand, is it better to be checked and be in the care of a doctor who's aware that there could be? Why not if you can, right?
Right. Better safe than sorry, I always say.
Thank you.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. That's my philosophy.
Okay, well, on the subject of winning things and also things that can help you keep your heart in good shape, I have been enjoying Scottish country dancing. This is Tess from up in Bellingham, and I've been doing that for the last 30 years or so. But as my vision has been affected, it hasn't affected my ability to do this form of dancing because there's so much group interaction. It's similar to square dancing. Some people might have the option to do what's called contra dancing, which is also similar to square dancing, or English country dancing. But there are Scottish country dancing groups all over the world, and it's a really fun way to stay fit and exercise. And it's not difficult because you work as a group, but it's like putting together a puzzle. You have your puzzle pieces, and you figure out every time you do a new dance, you fit those pieces together differently.
Very cool.
Yeah, that from a Scotsman, that's very cool.
We're going to have I think it's the head of the Royal Scottish Country Dance Society is coming to visit us at the end of April. So yeah.
You just need to watch your feet if you're going to dance over swords.
Well, now that's Highland dancing. That's different. This would be more like what you do at a Cayley.
Yeah, for sure. Good fun. Great fun.
Yes, definitely.
Awesome. Any other wins? These are great.
This is Chris from Long Beach. I feel like this is kind of low on the Inspirometer now, but I went out to Colorado to surprise my brother for his 40th birthday last weekend, and he had his party at this it was this basement like arcade pinball like bar place or whatever, and they gave us like a ton of tokens, and it's like my first time in a area like this, a bunch of games, and I wasn't moping, but I was kind of getting in my head about like, oh, I can't really see this stuff that great, you know. I could see what the games were because having played them before, but yeah, I was like, all right, I'm gonna try and play pinball again, and I had fun. It was as long as the game is well lit. Jaws was not that fun, but and I couldn't really see the score. But my best bet is my lower third, the Labyrinth game, that David Bowie movie from the 80s. That was a lot of fun. So. So the whole thing of getting up, throwing a few tokens in a machine and having fun for about 15 minutes.
Air hockey.
There was air hockey. Yeah, this place was really weird. It was like almost like a labyrinth. It was like a basement of a 100-year-old building. And there were always two people at the air hockey thing. But I got a 50-inch skee ball later in the night, too. So.
Awesome, buddy.
Does anybody bowl? I've gone bowling with my daughters and my grandson, and I had the second best score, so that tells you how bad everybody else was. But you know, they tell me how many pins went down, or if I knocked nine down, where I have to get the other one for a spare, and I never got a strike or anything, but I just could hear the bowling ball, you know, the sound of it going in the gutter. Oh my God. And I have a herniated disc, so I really have no business bowling, but I figure my back doctor wouldn't approve of it, but you know, I bowled two games. They bowled four, but I thought I could just got to stop this. It's killing my back. But, yeah, I had a pretty decent score. And I thought my form was really bad, though. I thought about that. You know, I swung the ball back, and I thought, oh, my God, it's going to go backwards. But, yeah, I bowled, and I don't think I've done that in, like, 20 years. So that was my accomplishment.
That's nice. Cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, when you're 78 years old, yeah, with a herniated disc, that is amazing.
That's cool.
Should be the least of your problems then.
Oh my God.
My name's Chris. I'm from Minnesota, and I have had LHON for 7 years, and I didn't bowl when I could see. And now I kind of bowl for something to do. And I bowl roughly once a week, sometimes in leagues. And just as you said, if I don't get a strike, someone has to tell me what number of pins are up. But it's doable. It's fun to hear the pins go down. And it's also fun sometimes to tell people that you just lost to a guy who can't even see the pins.
Hell yeah.
Kind of like a humble brag, but I won a high score in a league a handful of years ago. And it's doable, but it is fun just to get out and challenge yourself.
Yeah, with other people too, because, you know, especially at the beginning of this, like, you feel you can't do anything, so it's fun to get out and still figure out a way to do these things with others.
I didn't do it when I could see, so I'm still kind of new to it, but you just need someone to tell you what pins are left and challenge yourself. And the fun thing is you throw the ball and it comes back. You don't have to go look for it. So it's kind of bowling alley. Yeah, you throw the ball and it comes back. All right, perfect.
Yeah, and this is Dana, Chris's wife, and Chris won't brag about this, but he got 7 strikes in a row a few weeks ago.
No, that's crazy.
Awesome.
I know.
And he can't see the pins.
Yeah, and he can't see the pins, so he just, and he's not a bowler. I think he's just naturally athletic, and he, 7 in a row. It was amazing.
That was luck.
You just need someone.
I think that sounds like he knows how to do it.
I know, right? He beats me every time, and I can see.
He's doing something right, so yeah.
Yep. He just knows how the ball should go. Yeah.
You spinning? Yeah. Are you hooking it in there, or what? What's the deal?
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
But almost like when all of them are up, it might even be easier because that's if there's only 2, that's assuming you know how to actually hit those 2.
Yeah.
They tell me the number is like a 6-10 pin. I know that's on the right side. But what's kind of fun is when I give tips to people, I'm like, you do know you're getting tips from a legally blind person. And they improve. I'm like, I can't see what you're doing, but it's fun. But bowling is the sport you can do.
Oh, I love that.
Bocce's real quick, Lorenzo in Connecticut. Bocce is another one I played last summer. And so you have the white ball on a green grass, and pay attention if someone else throws first. But after your first ball, it's all, you know, muscle memory, in throwing that ball or rolling and jelly, or I do the old Italian toss it and let it dead drop and roll slowly, but I actually enjoyed it. And it was pretty good.
Enjoying frisbee golf the other day.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm really not any much worse than I ever was when I could see what I was doing, really. I'm not particularly good at it. But the bonus in frisbee golf is you just get to throw the frisbee more if you're in last place.
Yeah, those don't come back to you.
No, but if you use a bright yellow one, they're easier to spot.
Oh, good point.
Nice. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Plus, you never do it alone. You do it with a group, and then they can help you find your frisbee.
Definitely.
Any other wins? I think that's a wrap for us.
I don't know if this counts as a win, but something that I am happy about recently is I feel like I've hit like a decent balance with work. Currently I'm working 5 jobs and I am very happy that like I've been able to manage my schedule. So yeah, I don't know if that counts or not, but
That's definitely a win.
You're winning.
That is huge, Joey. That's awesome. Oh my God. And she sounds so excited about 5 jobs. I'm like, you go, girl.
Yeah, definitely. What are the 5 jobs?
So I work in after-school programming with blind and low-vision children. I have 4 different types of tutoring jobs. So I do work at 2 different tutoring agencies. One of them, I provide academic tutoring to sighted children in like math and English. And the other one, I provide academic tutoring to a blind child in English and math. And then I do private tutoring also with a blind child in reading comprehension. And then I do virtual freelance public speaking tutoring.
Oh, wow.
And you tutor statistics?
I do not tutor statistics. Any type of math that is like higher than elementary math, I do not tutor. And you would not want me to tutor.
All right.
So you won't do my taxes?
I get my brother-in-law to do that for me.
Wow, that's impressive. I think we all paused because we still had our jaws dropped when you said all those jobs. We were just waiting. We're like, oh my gosh. Wow.
Sometimes people ask me what I teach and I just say yes.
Not wrong. Oh, all right, cool. All right, well, this was fun. As always, like, keep me posted. Give me feedback. Like, if you have another idea or another, like, slew of questions, we definitely want to, like, kind of, like, throw in round robin to the crew. This is honestly, it's our best resources, all of us right here together. So let's, we'll call it there for April. But I think I'm going to jump over to news and events. So let's start out with Nanos. I know that was a conference that was this past month. Paul, Lori, tell us about Nanos.
Okay, Jessica. So when I agreed to do this, you told me I could maybe have like 3 or 4 minutes. And I don't know. I'm not going to be able to do it in 3 or 4 minutes because this conference was really awesome.
Ooh.
For those of you who may not know what NANOS is, NANOS is an acronym that stands for the North American Neuro-Ophthalmology Society. You know, it's a professional organization of about 900 providers, and they meet annually. And this year's conference was last month from the 13th through the 17th, and it was in Boston, and it was attended by me, Lissa, Melinda Marsh, and Tim Tyson. And for those of you who might not know who Tim is, Tim, if you went to the last LA Joint Conference in St. Louis, Tim was there. He was the intern from the University of Notre Dame. He's just finishing up at Notre Dame and about to head to med school somewhere. And he is still involved in doing some projects with the LA Joint community. So he did a spectacular job. Actually, I'll talk about it in a little bit about what he did. We had a booth at the conference, so we were there as, you know, kind of as exhibitors and, you know, representing the LHON collective and the, you know, LHON community. The booth looked great because we had this big, large LHON blue LHON banner, sort of behind the area where we sat. And then there was a newly designed table runner for the LHON collective. So it looked very, very professional. And on the table, we had information about the LHON collective. We had information about the data collection program, genetic testing. We had some information about Vision Consortium, which is an organization through Global Genes Rare X that some members of the LHON community participate in science and advocacy work. There was a PDF of a of an article relate with a QR code that Amy Koch had recently published, navigating health when sudden blindness occurs. That's kind of the theme of the article. And there was a related poster that was presented at the at Nanos. That's one of the primary things that Tim was there to do, and he did a fantastic job presenting the poster. Some of the other highlights, let's see. Yeah, the poster, by the way, was Beyond Vision Loss, Innovative Use, Innovative Case Management, and Improved Outcomes in LHON. And like I said, he really did an outstanding job explaining it. He had a lot of traffic in front of the poster. It was great. Other highlights were that one of the, so this is the second time I've been to Nanos, and Alyssa's been going for a while. I think Melinda, if she's still on the call, can chime in and tell us how many times she's been there, but definitely probably for the last, 3-4 years or so. And, you know, one of the most valuable things there is just the connecting with the, you know, neuro-ophthalmologist, obviously. And we definitely, you know, hit the big, you know, what I call the big three in North America, Dr. Sadoun, Dr. Nancy Newman. We had a lot of good time, in conversations with Rustam Karangia. There was also Joyce Liao from Stanford. And then internationally, there was Valerio Corelli and Chiara Lamorgia and Patrick Yui Mann and Benson Chen. And, you know, it's a risk naming people, because there was probably another 30, 40 neuro-ophthalmologists that we all, you know, either individually or collectively, got to chat with. And that's the, that's really the bonus of attending this kind of a conference for us. Saturday afternoon, we had a casual social meetup with 5 people from the LHON community that live in the Boston area. And it was a nice 2-hour break from the conference and did something like that. We were also joined by 2 representatives from Chiesi for a little while during the, this social meetup, and that was just, I'm really glad that happened. It was a, even though, you know, 5 may not seem like a lot, it was really valuable. One of the people that attended had, you know, hasn't been affected for very long, and I had a really, really nice time connecting with him. And so it was a good group and a good meetup. Let's see, trying to wrap this up. Let's see. Oh yeah, Monday was kind of, there was a really good session that we were all invited to attend that was really engaging, informative. It was basically like the clinical characteristics of LHON. It included some information about natural history and, you know, the clinical course of LHON and how, you know, how to diagnose it. And it was done in a 3-part panel, kind of a situation by doctors Alfredo Sadoun, Nancy Newman, and Joyce Liao. And I actually left shortly after that session, but I know that, at least I'm pretty sure that Melinda and Lissa and Tim attended some other sessions on Monday afternoon that included like mitochondrial advancements and improvements in mitochondrial testing, probably, you know, as it relates to ophthalmic conditions. So that is what's going on with the Nanos conference. You want me to keep going, or do you got somebody else lined up for the next, for another topic, Jessica?
Oh, no. Yeah, you can keep going. Yeah,
well,
I'm going to keep going
into the next thing you wanted me to talk about. Okay.
Oh, okay. Wait, then I'll pause. Anyone else on Nanos? Lissa?
Yeah. Linda? Oh, sorry. Okay. Paul Lorenzo here in Connecticut. Did Daniela Rudich, Dr. Daniela Rudich, was there by any chance? You recognize that name? Neuro-ophthalmologist?
I recognize the name. Lisa, okay. Melinda, do you remember? Was she there?
I recognize the name, but I don't recall seeing her this time around.
Yeah.
That's okay. She's my doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been asking, and I've been sharing all her information with her through my visits and on emails, too. But, yeah, I will chat with her soon about that. Thank you.
Awesome. Someone, anything else to add on, Anna?
Yeah, Lisa, Melinda, if you're on, anything to add?
I don't think Melinda's on. I mean, you hit everything, Paul. Great summary. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Paul, throw it back to you to keep rolling.
Okay.
What else do you have?
So the next thing I'm going to talk about is Chiesi, the pharmaceutical company, and the FDA's decision on Idebenone, where they're going to brand it as Rexmido. And so what I'm talking about is just I think many of you on the call know that the FDA did not approve a new drug application for Idebenone, for pharmaceutical grade, you know, Idebenone that was going to be branded as Rexmido. And the situation is that this the FDA issued back on February 28th, it's a CRL is what, it's a complete response letter. And a complete response letter is basically a communication from the FDA that says that, you know, they're unable to approve the therapeutic that you've applied for. And in its, you know, in its current form, essentially. So I think there's really not much I can say. I've never seen this, this letter. It's CRLs under the current administration are supposed to be transparent, but apparently there's been some inconsistencies with the FDA in making them transparent. So I can't find it, but I've seen press release coverage of it, and basically what it's, you know, the FDA apparently is looking for more robust clinical trial data before they approve this this here in the United States. And for those of you who may not know, this drug is already approved by the European Medicines Administration in Europe. And has been prescribed for a number of years there. I think Chiesi would like the LHON community to know that they're not giving up. They will, continue to work towards an approved therapy for LHON. This would have been the first approved therapeutic by the FDA for LHON if it had been approved. The FDA did give this a priority review, you know, process, and they, you know, they said they were going to make a decision by the 28th of February this year, and they did. And it's just that obviously this is, not what, Chiesi wanted to see happen. And they are, actively working on strategies for what to do next. And that could include anything from, you know, meeting with the FDA to get more specificity behind what is, you know, behind this, approval of the, of their new drug application, or some type of a formal, dispute resolution. So that's sort of, where things are. I know I'm kind of being vague, but that's because that's sort of what this process is about right now. Chiesi, for those of you who may not know, Chiesi is a pharmaceutical company based in Italy with their U.S. presence in Boston, and they are not publicly traded. So there's not a lot of responsibility on their part to be extremely forthcoming in communications compared to a publicly traded company. So I'm going to kick it back to you, Jessica, or to anybody who might have a question, knowing that I may not be able to answer too many questions regarding this issue. But
Yeah, no, thank you, Paul. That was a great summary. Yeah, I'll pause for questions for Paul.
Okay, so I understand you don't know what the next part of the process is exactly, but if the FDA basically denied approval for this as thing, does that mean that it's going to continue to not be available to people to purchase as we had done before?
No, it has no impact on that.
Okay, because, I mean, there was the implication that idebenone wasn't going to be until the FDA approval came through.
If it was approved, it would have ceased and desist anybody selling it if it was a prescription. Is that correct, Paul?
It might have. We're really not going to know the answer to that until it, you know, probably until there is an approval. So, but for now, there's no approval. So keep getting your idebenone, those of you who take it and purchase it, you know, through the sources that you use.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some really, really good partnership, you know, with the LA, you know, with the collective, with the LA joint community and TAC's patient advocacy team. It's, you know, we had an impressive group of people, you know, do some patient advocacy work, both, we met with some of them before the Nanos conference. And then in February, there was another sort of advisory board kind of meeting where LHON, you know, patients and family members have really been making Chiesi understand the patient perspective for LHON. And I've really seen what, and now really believe, having met a lot of these people in person, that this is a very patient first pharmaceutical company. And you know, it's a family-owned, family-run pharmaceutical company, and it sort of shows.
Jessica, I don't know if you can see it, but Richard's got his hand raised.
Oh, no, I can't, but thank you very much. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, and one of the things, and I could be very wrong or just not informed enough, but because idebenone doesn't necessarily work on different mutations, right? Because the 3460, it might, but some of the studies haven't shown that the 3460 mutation it works as it does in some of the other mutations. Is that I know I've only had limited, you know, research or information gathering. So
yeah, there's one study out there that links that specific genetic variant, LHON variant, to some type of issue with, you know, with idebenone use. And it was sort of a I guess you would call it like a byproduct of the clinical trial data that was done on, you know, idebenone by, some of the previous clinical trials that were done. And so there's this issue, but it actually would be, according to one of the experts, actually a name I mentioned before, Dr. Valerio Corelli told me a couple of years ago that it could impact any LHON genetic variant on the ND1 gene. So, like, for example, my genetic variant is 4171, and like 3460 resides or is a point mutation on the ND1 gene, and therefore this NQ01 issue with is potential, you know, for anyone who has a point mutation for LHON on the ND1 gene.
Okay. No, thank you. And I just like I said, I have limited knowledge, and it's always great to ask the questions and be better informed with a lot of these discussions. Thank you very much.
All right, cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul. Good info. I'm going to piggyback off a little bit of what – oh, go ahead, someone. No? Okay, I'm going to keep going. I was going to piggyback off a little bit of what Paul was saying when he was talking about getting get-togethers and how they got together with some people in, that were local there in Boston. Lisa, can I throw it to you and kind of talk through other other opportunities for gatherings?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Paul said, it was super fun to get together with a crew in Boston, and we had three of us from San Diego and five from Boston, representing three different families. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a big group or a small group. Actually, Chris Bowman's on the call right now, and I met up with him when I was at Nanos just before COVID. And it was Chris and his now wife and one other person. And it was just the same kind of a thing. We just hung out and chatted for hours, and it was great. And so the idea is there are other situations where people are going to be in various places. And if anyone wants to do that kind of a meetup, you know, just super cash, hang out, you know, have a Coke, chat, there's opportunities. So for instance, coming up in May, ARVO is a conference that's focused on vision research, and it's going to be in Denver. I'm looking at you, Richard. So like on, you know, Sunday, May 3rd, for instance, there's a break in the schedule from 1:30 to 3:30. So, you know, maybe we can get some of the folks in the Denver area. Jessica is going to be working that conference, and a couple other people might be there. So that's one option. And then there's a couple things going on in Texas. Foundation Fighting Blindness tends to focus on retinal disease, so that conference probably isn't a conference that's meaningful to anyone in this community. But we do have Bob Banks, who is president of the U.S. Blind Golf Association, and they've asked him to be a speaker there. And so, like, if anyone's in the Fort Worth, Texas area, you know, maybe after his talk on Friday, June 12th from like 7 till 9, maybe folks could get together and just chat with him. He'll be there with his wife. And then another Texas opportunity, which is kind of interesting, is NFB is having their conference, and usually there's a crew of LHON people who are at NFB conferences. They don't always know the others are there, but there usually are some LHON folks there, and people might want to attend that conference to attend the conference. And if they're there, they might want to, you know, run into the others who are there. And that's going to be in Austin, July 3 through 8. So if anyone's thinking of going to the NFB conference in Austin, July 3 through 8, or if anyone lives in that area and wants to do just a meetup for a couple of hours, maybe we can get that organized. And then kind of similarly, I think everybody here has heard that in 2026, we're not having the classic LHON conference. However, UMDF is having their mitochondrial medicine conference in Orlando, and many folks in this community benefit from attending a UMDF conference. It won't be like the ones we've been at in the past. We're not having LHON-specific content, but there will be a crew of us there from the LHON community. So if folks want to come to the conference because they want to learn about mitochondrial issues in general, like explore some of what we were talking about earlier, like cardiac issues and things like that, that's a place to attend the conference and get a reduced rate and hang out with LHON people without LHON specific content. And we'll probably try and find a time to do just a meetup like that's what we were talking about for people who live in and around Orlando. Folks that might just want to come in for a couple of hours. And so that's June 18th through 20th in Orlando. And again, people might want to attend the whole conference or just come in for a couple hours. So those are some of the meetups. And then the most important thing that's going to happen in 2027, I'm going to toss it over to Maria.
Hey, everybody. Yes. Leave it for the best part. Okay. 2027 is actually going to be our next LHON conference. And as Lissa said, Orlando MitoMed will not have any specific LHON sessions that we know of at this point, but we will be full-fledged LHON everything in 2027. So let's start with the details. The 2027 conference will be April 30th, May 1st, and May 2nd in San Diego, California. Okay, we got a lot of people in California in the Southwest, and anyone else who wants to come from all over the world are more than welcome. So we're hoping to get at least 100 more people than we've ever had come to a conference in the last 13, 14 years that this conference has been going. The highest amount we've had is 150 attendees. We'd like to get between 200 and 250, and I think we can do it. So let's talk the small details. April 30th, we're going to start with a welcome reception that evening, and that is a Friday, and where everyone is welcome to come to the party and just kind of get to see who's there. What we used to kind of do at the other conferences, if you've attended, we kind of have the kind of a meet and greet, if you will. Well, this is the same kind of a thing to kick off our conference. It will be a full day on Saturday of sessions, Saturday the 1st, and it will be a half a day of sessions on Sunday the 2nd. It will break. We don't have a schedule or an agenda quite yet. We're obviously very early in the planning stages of this, but we're looking to break before lunch around 12:30 or so on Sunday. So what that means is that if you can't take a lot of time off, you can come in on Friday and you can leave on Sunday, all right, and make it kind of a weekend thing. But what's so great is that you can come a little bit early and have a little vacation time in San Diego, or stay afterwards and do a little vacation time in San Diego. The hotel that we have contracted with is the DoubleTree in Mission Valley, and they are being kind enough to extend the group rate a few days before and a few days after, and so that you can take advantage of that rate if you'd like to stay and make a little bit of a mini vacation out of it. As many of you who have been to San Diego or live in San Diego, you know, it's a really wonderful, wonderful city with lots to do. The type of agenda we're planning to have will be very similar to what we've done in the past, except this year we are basically owning the whole thing. We're going to own this whole hotel. We will be the only conference at this hotel. It is very navigable. Is that even a word? Very easy to navigate, I should say. It's got, some of you will appreciate this. It has a really large bar lounge that opens up into their pool. Very easy to find. I got one, Lorenzo. That is the area that people love to hang out in. And for those of you who have been, and for those of you who haven't been, being with other families and other folks who are going through this journey is so important, not only in sessions and learning about others' journeys, science, community, mental health, living healthy, advocacy, fundraising, all the different topics that we go over, but it's also about just being together and having some of that one-on-one time, getting to know other people in the community that have come all the way to wherever location we're going to be in, to meet each other in person. It really truly is like meeting family you never knew you had. And we still will be having coffee and conversation this coming year, because it's very popular. And that's where we set aside about 2 hours of just literally coffee and conversation. It's networking time. We want to make that kind of time as available as possible. We have two rooms that we'll be running during the conference. We have a regular lecture room, which is the tables that are set up like classroom style. And we have a round table room because we've gotten a lot of positive feedback about our round table sessions. And we want to make the most of that as well, where we can have different people at different tables and then we rotate around. Again, if some of you have been to the last two conferences, we did something similar, but we want to make a lot of use out of that because people really loved it. So hanging out at the hotel, Friday night, Saturday night, we're not sure what we might try to organize, whether it's small group dinners, maybe there's a Padre game in town that night, Christy Nicolo, or maybe it's just hanging out at the hotel. There's lots of easy to get to restaurants. Literally, there's a walkway, a pedestrian walkway that goes right across to several restaurants straight from the second floor of the hotel. So easy for us blind kids to get to. And then Sunday, of course, absolutely can be a day of an afternoon of hanging out in the bar lounge, which would be just like we've done when we've gone to the conferences, when we've done it with MitoMed. So we really put a lot of thought into the location, how we're going to, you know, run the agenda, how we're going to run the schedule so that we can make the most of it and bring everything and more that you've grown to expect and love about our conferences from all these years past and bring it on home. I'll just say that because my hometown's San Diego, but bring it on home for you all to enjoy and learn and connect and collaborate and feel supported and leave feeling like it was worth everything to be there. San Diego, 2027, April 30th, May 1st, May 2nd. So mark your calendars now. Watch for more information coming on social media. We're planning to launch registration early this time. We were kind of under the guidelines of UMDF in the past year, so we had to launch registration when they launched it. But we're going to launch it probably at the end of June of this year so that you can get registered and on the list so that we know you're coming. And then hotel probably will open up at the same time. You want to book those rooms. So lots coming just a few months away. So be on the watch for not only Facebook, because I know not all everyone's on Facebook, but also we'll be doing emails as well. You know, the information is going to be everywhere. And of course, it will be on LHON.org under the conference tab. We will keep that updated as well. So if you don't have access to anything else, you can go to LHON.org conference tab. We will keep it updated there with links to register, links to do your hotel, and links to the agenda when we have that a little bit closer to reveal. And of course, links to past videos that you can watch, listen to of all the past conferences. So that if you don't know what our conference is like, you can go on there and it is just years worth of videos that you can check out to get a feel of what, you know, what goes on at conference. What are the sessions like? What can you learn? What can you take away? So I advise anyone who hasn't been to do that. And so I can go on, trust me, but I'm a big passion of this. And Jessica's there right by my side. Lissa's big on it. I have part of my conference team. Paul's on the conference team. I don't know who else is on the call, but we have a conference team of eight. We put in a ton of work, so we really want to make this special, especially our first year of doing it on our own. So we hope we see a lot of you there.
Woohoo! Thanks, Maria. Thanks, Maria. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lissa. Lots of activities. Anyone? Any questions?
This is a question long. It's Lissa kind of just put this idea in my head. Well, one, I'm a Cubs fan, although I do love Petco Park. Anyways, I'm on the Foundation Fighting Blindness calls for Southern California. I do kind of feel like a sore thumb because they're mainly an RP thing. But I was surprised to hear that we're having our vision walk, which happens in September. We're having a kickoff, I believe it's at USC, middle of July. I was surprised to hear that we're actually going to have a speaker focusing on LHON. So ooh, it's not cool. Dr. Sadoun, but I'll email Xavier, one of the leaders of the group. He didn't have the full doctor list yet, but he did say, we'll have one at LHON, but I'll post something in the Southwest group. It's like a, it's a Saturday. And it's gonna be like 5-6 hours. That's from like vendors and stuff. But I'll, once I get the doctor's name and the time and where it exactly is, I'll post something in the Southwest group.
Chris.
Yeah, Chris. I'm curious.
Yes. Where's the location?
I think it's USC. In the back of my head, I'm kind of nagging, thinking it's we have a thing at USC in a couple weeks on the 18th. It may be UCLA, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be at USC. It's like middle of July, but it's the Vision Walk kickoff for the walk that's happening in September.
Is there any chance it's the other Labors? Because the other Labors is under the FFB umbrella.
Is it also LHON?
Well, no, it's LPA.
No. Okay.
But it's,
no,
but
they did specifically say LHON on the call, so I'll confirm that, and and if everything's legit for us, I'll post something in the Southwest group.
Yeah, please. Or when we do news events next month, please jump in.
Cool.
Awesome. Any other questions? Conference, personal, or events? All right. Well, then let's jump right in. Since conference is 13 months away, countdown is on, people. In the meantime, we have all these wonderful Zoom events that are happening. So I'm going to roll right into the events that are happening this month. So next call after this one is on Wednesday, April 8th, and that is the West Region call, and that is at 7 p.m. Pacific. Quick note that that's a little different than typical, so check that out. Then there is the Southeast Region call, and that is on Thursday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Next is LH1 Plus, and that is on Saturday, April 11th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Then it's Dads of LH1 Affected Kids, and that's at Wednesday, April 15th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then it's the Midwest Region call, and that is on Monday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Central. Then it's the Onset at 60 Plus, and that is on Tuesday, April 21st at 5 p.m. Pacific. And there's the LH1 Assistive Technology call, and that is on Monday, April 27th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And last but not least is the LH1 Affected Teams call, and that is on Wednesday, April 29th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And that is a wrap for April's calls. At this time, would you please stop the recording? In the meantime, I'll apologize. We did go a little bit longer than probably the typical.